Hello and welcome back to the Breachport Podcast. Been on a little bit of a hiatus, but we're here to cover the final GG4 strategy. Debatably the most interesting one, or the most innovative, potentially, in terms of their previous strategies. Stuff the ballots. So, this one is pretty unique in that there are 7 strategy markers on the board, which is a lot more than you might expect the first time you play it. 2 are on the center line on the table edges, 1 in each quarter, and then 1 in the very middle. They're height 5, blocking and passable. Then every turn after the first turn, models within an inch of the marker can interact to place a vote token on the strategy marker. And it is the person controlling determines which type of strategy marker, so obeys do work for this one. If at any point a strategy marker has a total of 6 votes, combining friendly and enemy, you remove all of the vote tokens from that strategy marker. As it usually works, at the end of each turn, crew gets 1 VP if it is controlling more strategy markers, not completely on its own table half, then VP has been scored on the strategy. So, what are y'all's initial thoughts on this one?
Well, I know it kind of came up with when we've done the other 2 about the fact that you cannot actually interact with the strategy the first turn. Whether you want to or not, unlike planting plant explosives and cloak and dagger, you cannot touch the strat markers. Which is good and bad. I mean, we talked about how grabbing strat things too early and the other ones can actually bite you in the butt, but for this one it's not allowed, which makes for some interesting dilemmas on how quickly you move to the center line, how quickly you try to move past it to try to score in the back ones. It's another layer that gets added in. Your super fast crews don't get the jump on you for just being to the center line first. It does help for AP efficiency because you can dump 2 to 3 votes in right away. But you also have to live. So if you have models on, let's say, both corner, turn 1, you're just sitting there with 2 models, well, they could have easily been dead before they get to vote. Or Seamus comes through, pops up there, kills the model, and still votes twice because you're on the other side. So it's just something to keep in mind that this, I think, is the most interesting because it is a delayed strat. You cannot start doing things to affect it really until the second turn. What about you, Scott?
Yeah, I thought initially that I thought this was the most interesting strategy that came out of the GG4. I kind of changed my mind. I do like the cloak and dagger more, mainly for the kind of the back and forth on when to interact with the strategy markers versus stealing them from your opponents. And we kind of touched that on our previous episode when we went into cloak and dagger, so I won't go too much in that. But I really do like this one. Like we have also talked about in previous episodes and our GG4 episode, I think this one is the one you're going to see more than the other ones. The larger amount of models to starting off the game with. And also, so like for me, I've been really liking Necma 2 in this one with the dogs and the youngs and stuff like that, because that crew is just so fast, and you can get to the center line and the opponent's backfield more quickly, obviously, than you can with a lot of other crews. I also think, too, that this strategy is very also impacted by having the wedge or standard versus corner and flank, because those ones that are touching the corners or the edges of the board on the center line are much farther away in the corner, especially corner and flank than the other ones. So lends another wrinkle to the strategy, kind of like how Raid the Vaults does as well. Which then also, I think, lends itself to being able to, with these schemes involved, being able to possibly bluff a little bit more on schemes where you taking where those might be impactful, being on the center line and in those corners, like with a lot of the schemes are in this one. So I've been really enjoying it. I've been playing a lot of 9, 10, 11 model crews on this one, just because if you're going to be, especially leaving a models back to vote in your backfield, which I think is a very good strategy in this one, especially with, again, the Hounds being able to vote twice, turn two, and then turns three and four, being able to vote with pretty much any marker on their half of the board, being on the center line on whatever half you have them in the board, and then the opponent's backfield would basically be able to move 18 inches. So that, I think that's an excellent strategy to use in this one, is voting on those back ones. So later in the game, your opponent can't, well, not can't, but makes it much more difficult to get the points for those.
Yeah, I mean, you made a lot of good points, Scott, in there about some of the complexities, being able to get out to those outside corners. One thing that I love and hate to see is outflank with this strategy, because it can be super easy for some crews, and if you don't have a crew that can get to those corners, it is kind of a free give me for the opposing crew. If they have a faster team, not only are they going to be able to get probably two strat points at least, because they're going to control both those corners, but then they are leaving that model just sitting there, and that's scoring them the first and possible second point if you can't also get out there. But, I mean, I guess it's give or take, because if you do, if both players have that chance, then it's who can beat down the other in a corner to be able to claim it. So I guess keep an eye out for that. But I guess I've played this a fair number of times, and usually one person is just way better. Crew is like a Nekoma crew, or I'll tell you, I've been playing a lot of Dashiell and Mounted Guard and a pair of Wardens. One horse and one armor two model making their way out to those corners are hard to stop from kind of controlling, you know, both sides. So for me, it's been great to have outflank in there, because armor 2, 5 wounds, and if Dashiell wants to be within 8 and come over to that side, Wardens are extremely hard to take down with Dashiell 2. So I don't know. I just think outflank, as you mentioned, schemes, is one that I would try to cultivate out of that pool if I was making a tournament, just because it's a win more, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Kind of combining those points, trying to control all 7 of the strategy markers is pretty difficult, so I think really the key is looking at the scheme pool and your opponent's crew, trying to kind of predict which ones are the easiest for them to get to, and maybe trying to contest those rather than trying to cover all 7 on the board, unless you're maybe Nekoma with 4 hounds on your side or something.
Oh, yeah. And don't forget, too, since models that don't have Don't Mind Me with Me, you do need to be unengaged to interact with these. So the 2-inch reaches are really key in this. If you're you want to bring a lot of those, they can really keep your opponent from being able to interact with the strategy markers, especially if they're placed someplace where maybe they can only get to one side of it. Like, let's say they're up against a wall or something like that, where they can't get it from one side. You can park some Reach 2 models next to them and can really lock those down. Or other strategies, like, for instance, maybe playing like Euripides or Raspi, you could, if you have one or two of the markers that are near terrain, you can play some impassable terrain in front of it, so that way that slows your opponent down even more. They have to slam those markers and then interact, whereas you might be able to put it in such ways that you can get to it and then block them off with your impassable terrain.
Yeah, and don't forget about Sandeep too. He's been making a big splash out there in the world right now, and people forget about his ice pillar markers because you don't see them much. I see most people just continually drop in the pyre markers for the burning and the damage, but a well-placed ice pillar can especially block off all those lanes, and all it takes is that delay of a turn, and then when you lose that round of scoring, it can be enough to seal the deal. I mean, I've seen this one easily be like a 8-7 because there are so many strats out there. You only have to control four of them to get all your points, and that's basically just under half, so it's a pretty easy split for most of the game if you're playing it right.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of a strategy you saw with symbols, is people would put them near the edges of the board or terrain and block them off with markers. Now I think it's even more effective. Granted, you can't place the stuff, the balance markers, in where exactly you want them to, but if they are in such a place where you can block them off, I think it makes it even more effective, because typically it's going to take more interacts to score this strategy. And if you're slowing someone down at a marker for a turn longer than they want to be, then that could help prevent later on scoring in this strategy. It's so much movement and interacting with this strategy and with these schemes in general. I think another thing that I've seen, not just in my games, but in my local group and watching some of the Vassal stuff, is that I don't think anyone really talked about when the new GG came out, but it appears summoning is making a comeback in this GG, especially if you can summon near your opponent's models. Since, again, if you don't have Don't Mind With Me, and let's say a master I use, Pandora 2, she drops one of her summons right next to you. Well, guess what? Until you kill that summons, now you can't interact with that strategy marker. So I think up the field summons, or being able to put them next to models when they are summoned. So, like, for instance, Dreamer 1, when he summons, they do come in buried, but you'll... for next turn, you move that model up next to the stuff, the ballot marker. Now all you have to do is make you fail a willpower duel, and you've got an help or an insidious madness or whatever sitting in your face, and now you can't interact with it. So I think not just in this one, but in this GG4, that summons are making a comeback. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I've always been a Dreamer 1 stan. To a fault, probably. I've always thought summons are still pretty good. It's harder to score with them, definitely, but I think they've been good at denying stuff for a while, and it's definitely the case in this GG where Don't Mind Me is relevant again. Being able to tie stuff up can easily deny a couple points a game. So I would definitely say it's good.
I think that one of the reasons I've seen so many come back is not only is it denial, but there's so much AP needed for some of these schemes and strats that while your summons the first turn can't drop scheme markers when they're summoned, later on they're going to count. And being able to... I used to do it with Masaki all the time, where I'm going to summon two Katashiro the first turn, and later in the game, they're dropping me all my scheme markers off in the corners, because that's all they're going to do. They're my free summons. They costed me some scrap markers, but for the rest of the game, you're either going to deal with them, or they're going to score me my schemes. You know, by turn 3, 4, 5, they're doing what they need to do. So that's why Asami, I know, like you said, Ivan, I've seen him come back. Ivan won. I've been playing a lot more, like I said, Dashiell, which has some summoning on both versions. Dreamer 2 is just good, which doesn't summon as much, but Dreamer 1 is good. So in general, I've seen a lot of the auxiliary summons models come back too, like Monaco Ray and maybe Vasilisa or the Widow Weaver. Some of the ones that just get those small cost models off of scrap or corpses, they seem to be extremely powerful. Corrupted hounds, being able to bring other hounds in, things along those lines.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I had a recent game in Stuff the Ballots where I had lost a couple models early in turn two, and I had turn one, and then I believe in also in turn two, I had summoned some additional hounds. So I had those hounds were able to concentrate scoring me the schemes, whereas my models that I had hired at the beginning of the game could concentrate more on the Stuff the Ballots. So, yes, absolutely. Having those early summons, turns one, two, and three, to help out with schemes, assuming you're not just chucking them in the middle of your opponents, like, Asami throwing her spider boy, Jorodumo, into the middle of a crew to tie two, three, four, or five models down, because you can't just let those things run in your backfield. Being able to have them, assuming they live, score you your schemes where your models that you hired are giving you those strats, and these high interacting strategies like Stuff the Ballots, because if your opponent is putting a lot of votes on them, I mean, to control one of these markers, you're looking at 3, 4. I even had one game where I had to interact with one for 5 times because it was very hotly contested. We just kept throwing a couple of votes here, a couple of votes there. And it was a key one because it was on the center line, so we could both count it for scoring. But it is a highly interactive strategy. So getting those incidental ones either to, like we said, gum up your opponent or score your schemes is really helpful in this strategy.
One of the things that now is out there, I know it was previewed a while back, but the Nightcrawler Network, I'm going to tout Dashiell a lot lately. So if you can't tell, I'm on a Dashiell kick back with the guild. But the Nightcrawler Network and those camera bots, they seem to be kind of a theme for some of the Ashes stuff that we've seen, where we have this smaller, less model summoning, because I know they've just recently done like the leeches, which can summon off of like half health stuff. And we got the Nightcrawler Network, and I'm kind of interested to see if that's going to be a thing for Ashes. But at least for those camera bots, the fact that it's his bonus action and the Nightcrawler Network can do it through any other camera bot as well, I'll tell you, a 10-point combo, just having that one deployed out there, he sometimes doesn't have to take any AP to move. And he's great for this one. If there's any large chunk of terrain, which I've seen Vassal maps and I've seen in person, there's usually a big forest or there's a big building or two somewhere on the map. And the fact that there's a built-in push of 4 inches usually means my opponents have found it very difficult to actually stop me from scoring most of my ballot points, because he can just be like, bonus action, I'm going to summon this camera bot. It pushes 4 inches away from this, which is enough to be close enough to do my own 2 AP of interacts now to cast votes very easily to the back line or the corners without actually even moving. So that, along with Mounted Guard and stuff, has made, for me, my opinion, Dashiell an extremely good choice for some of these options, because there's still got some death and you've got a lot of interaction now through the new model.
So you just summon the camera bots off a piece of terrain? Is that how that works?
Yep, you have to pick a piece of terrain within 6 inches, and then, but that 6 inches can also be, or it might be 8 for that. I've been doing a lot, but I think it's 6. But that can also be within 6 inches of another camera bot that's already out there. And then you have to summon the camera bot in base contact with that piece of terrain, not including line of sight. So you can put it when you're just barely touching the front edge of a forest, 7 inches diagonally to the backside of that forest. You can place that camera bot where you can't see, basically, and then kick it another 4 inches to interact with the marker back that way. Now, they can't interact, but you can interact through them, kind of like the silent ones and ice pillars.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. You don't even need line of sight to summon them. A little out of the ordinary for the base rules on summoning.
And I mean, they don't have any movements on their own, so they have to rely on other models to move around. But once they're in place, they do have stealth, they have extended reach, they have all sorts of defensive tech to just make things very annoying. And in this one, if they are sitting around a ballot, they have that 2-inch journalist bubble that says, "I control your interacts." So you have to kill them before you're allowed to actually interact if they're sitting near it. It's been healthy. Very, very good for me.
Nice. Well, since I'm the one with the least experience on the strategy, the question on my mind is, how often are markers actually hitting the 6 and getting reset in your guys' games?
For me, it did happen quite a bit in my early on matches and this strategy. Now that I've been playing it more and we're getting more into the maturing of this GG, it's happening less. And that's another reason why I think voting on those back ones is so important, because I think that if you basically, especially in the middle ones, it's a race to who can get it up to 3 first. Because sometimes if you get it up to 3 and they haven't put a vote in it, that's, I've seen a tendency that your opponent doesn't want to spend basically 2 turns of one model's activations worth of interacts just to get it to neutral and then 1 for them. Because now they've just had to spend 4 AP. Granted, you had to spend the 3 AP to get it there already, but spending that 4 AP to own it as their own. So I think that is key. If you can get to those markers and get it up to 3 first, makes it more likely than not that you are going to own that marker for the entirety of the game. Because not only do they have to get 4 votes on it to score it for them, but that also is giving you so much time to be able to interrupt that. Basically, you're talking, what, 2 model, unless you're using a master or you're handing out a lot of fast or whatever the case may be. That's 2 models, full activations, where you are going to have at least 1 activation, if not more, to interrupt getting it to a point where they are going to be able to score it and take away your ability to score off of it. So, yeah, to answer your question early on, I think I saw it more and a little bit less so now.
I still see it a fair amount in the middle. Usually there's 1 that's where most of the fight and the stalling happens, where you'll see it get reset just because it's that one where both people are trying to be there. But unless there's outflank or something in the pool, usually I've seen it nowadays where, I'm going to give you 1, I'm going to go to the other side, and you kind of feel each other out, it seems like, nowadays, where which ones are we going to fight over, which ones am I going to give you, and this is going to be the one that we're going to fight. So, 1 or 2 are the ones that I'm going to see maybe reset, but it's very strategic now, and I'm not just trying to get to them all and stuff all of them. It's these are the ones we're going to fight over. Because it is very hard to stop any points from your opponent. You have to crush them to stop them from getting any of them. I've seen it happen once, but it is difficult to stop any strat points from this one.
And also, and I think that's continuing on that, I think this is also a strategy that you're not going to see a lot of scoring 4 points on it. I think if you're planning on winning, especially having an advantage in strategy, you want to plan for three and keeping your opponent to one or two. If you're expecting four, I think in the games I played, I think I've only gotten four once or twice. And the one I know I remember, it was kind of a little bit of a slobber knocker. There was a little bit of good luck red jokers on my half, bad luck black jokers on their half. So I'd kind of eliminated almost all their models by turn four. So I had gotten four. But I think, yeah, that sweet spot is to be, if you're looking at the game, how many you're, where you're going to get your points, strategies, and schemes. I think if you were planning to get four, kind of wishful thinking, I think three is where you would want to expect to come in on this one.
I've seen Seamus take four and Story, our red library. I will tell you, those bookkeepers are great because they're three AP interactors and they ignore terrain, paper tiger, and then also once per game reactivating one of them. So both of them, it's, Molly's great. I think Molly could probably take all four just because of activation control and then just sheer amount of AP and other versions like that. I haven't seen a lot of Terra lately, but she might be one that might be able to. Or Asami. I know Asami can do it with, between all the Tengu and then your summoning models, but it does have to be a little bit of a I'm winning more to get all four, because usually you're fully in control. Those are games that if you're going to get eight, your opponent's probably getting three or less in this strat.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. My other kind of question, since I'm kind of more in the interviewer role this time around, was there was a lot of speculation about Obeys being really big in this one, since they're finally able to actually score strategy points again. Have you guys seen any kind of rising of those Obey Masters or Obey models at all?
I myself personally have not done it. I said I've been on kind of a Necma 2 kick in this GG4 so far, with a little bit of Dreamer sprinkled in because, you know, it's Dreamer and he's my boy. The one game I have seen, other than like games I've played, that is, I've seen quite a bit of Vassal games. I haven't seen a whole lot of people obeying other models do it for them. Is I ran into a Nelly 2 game that I played, and Nelly 2 not only killed my mature Nephilim in one activation, but made it vote twice for her. So that was made me very sad. So it is possible. Obviously, that was one of the big things when they released this GG4, was saying that that was possible. But I have not seen a lot of it. Well, maybe it's just Obey Masters aren't getting a lot of love so far in this GG4. So maybe it'll be something like one of those things where, you know, people have been playing the same thing over and over again, and then someone just brings an Obey Master and shows everyone what they can do in the strat with it. I know Longton in the Vassal World Series and stuff like that, he has been playing a lot of Zareda 1, but in the games I've seen him play, I have not seen him obey people to vote for him. I don't know if I've actually even seen him use Zareda in a stuff the ballot match, but I also know, and listening to his stuff online, that he's more of someone who is, I obey my own models as opposed to obeying my opponent's models, his general philosophy on it. So that could also be contributing to that he's not looking to obey the enemy. So what about you, Brian? Have you had any experience either for or against?
Well, I'd say outside of the Marifold World Series, and yes, seeing a certain Zoraida list go around where it's mainly I'm going to either jinx and then, you know, kill all your stuff with my models on Ensorcel. I've seen some Lucius out there. There you go, James. But again, that's like your own models and not on your opponent's. I haven't, since I've been on Guild, and Lucius can't obey the enemy, outside of some of the other stuff, I haven't been playing Lady Justice to have any obeys, and I haven't really tried it with lawyers yet. I've been kind of saving Lucius for later. So personally, no. I also haven't played a lot of Misaki 2 lately. Yeah, I don't know. I've seen it in Cloak, but I have not seen it in Stuff the Ballots. And maybe that's just because there's so much AP involved with stuffing the ballots that, you know, getting that one obey is not as impactful as it is for, like, no, you're going to drop your marker back there with an obey. Because I'll tell you, obeying someone to drop their plant marker on their own side of the board is great. Or it's much more impactful to do that or have someone pick up the or drop their cloak and dagger stuff. It is, or, yeah. Either way, it's much more impactful in other ones than this one is what I'm getting at. So one AP off a master to obey is different.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think, just from my general knowledge of obeys, there aren't a ton of high-statted obeys around, and unless you're at a pretty big advantage, obviously it makes a lot more sense to obey your own stuff, so it makes sense to me. Did you guys have any other final thoughts before we move on to the kind of winners and losers of the different factions?
Not just that, I think when you're, especially if you're going to this one, playing it for the first time or two, is you want to anticipate having to do a lot of obeys for this, a lot of movements. The Rage Quit Wire really had a good episode that they talked about beater schemers. So where models that, you know, like your fly with me is your leaps and stuff like that, where a model could interact. So if you are doing those kind of like leapers and stuff like that, so I think a slurds is always a good one to think about. Is they're great at getting places, doing some double voting, or so the other strategies are really good at getting those things up the board and interacting. You do have to be conscious of who is the beater crew in this. So for instance, I had a game with one of my local players, and she had brought a Zerata crew and had some Slurids in it. And I was playing my Nekoma 2 crew. Well, 9 times out of 10, a young Nephilim is going to trounce a Slurid. And fortunately, she did recognize that fact early on in the game and kept her Slurids as much as you possibly can away from young Nephilims, because, you know, they're pretty much as fast as a Slurid. And like I said, they're going to trounce them in a fight, especially if you can gang up on them. So you want to be conscious of that as your schemers who are going to go for your stuff the ballots, particularly if they're going to go into your opponent's deployment zone for this, is the schemers that you're going to be passing along the way, are yours going to get trounced, or are you going to trounce theirs, you know? Or at least if not getting trounced, are you tanky enough? And like you have the model escapes of mine, the Leapy Boys for Von Stuck and Levy. I mean, they're not very beady, but they are tanky. So if they're going to be there for maybe a young Nephilim attack or some Silurids or whatever your du jour beater schemer is for this, are they going to survive one or two attacks from what your opponent may be running to the other side of the board too, as they pass each other in the middle of the board? So just something to think about is you want to know in your mind what your opponent is going to be likely to be able to use to take out your models that are going to your opponent's backfield.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, and I'm sure our buddy Rob is screaming at his computer right now because I'm not remembering the name of those models either. But
so is Zach.
Yeah, exactly.
The last thoughts I would have is that just because this can be extremely interact heavy, especially in GG4, the thing I have noticed is you still need to have some sort of threat on the table to pick apart or to scalpel. So you need, and I still say this, at least a threat and a backup threat that can at least take out schemers. You don't need to go beater for beater and, you know, take all your giant henchmen matures, but there should be something in your list that can at least confront another schemer and possibly come out on top. That secondary beater that you would normally bring can be your main beater if you're going to out-interact. I mean, young Nephilim are great. I mean, they usually grow, but they're almost that perfect 7 cost. They're not super expensive, but they have super mobility. They have a 5+ 2-4-5 damage track with Onslaught. So they are that, I mean, they can actually be a primary beater. But what I'm saying is there should be something in your crew for this to be able to try to stop. Because if you don't try to stop, it's going to be very hard to win.
Makes sense to me. Well, as always, since I'm the one sharing my screen, I get to pick first. I'm going to obviously pick the purple team first. I guess I will go ahead and throw a couple of these out here. I think Akina Broodmother is obviously the queen of the GG. I called it early, and now enough people are running her that my snowflake tendencies are making me not want to run her anymore, but she's definitely a monster on this one. She can get a lot of AP out there. She can do Dark Bargain to do an extra one when you're not expecting it. The Hounds, the Young, the Fly With Me. It all adds up to being able to interact many, many, many times, almost all the way across the board. It just makes a lot of sense. She can get a lot of ski markers, because when things grow, they also drop ski markers, so there's just a lot of efficiency. She can cover a lot of the board at a time. Now, that all being said, and again, I'm not the one with a lot of experience in the strategy, Euripides 1 comes to mind as far as being able to drop impassable terrain on the board. Yuri 1 is up there with one of the most efficient. And he does have some semi-mobile models, so I think he would be interesting, and his shockwave attack can bypass a lot of defenses sometimes, especially like incorporeal and terrifying, my least favorite things to deal with. I would also throw out Lucius, either Lucius, honestly, because Lucius 2 can pull people off of points very efficiently, while Lucius 1 can just get those extra interacts on a 12, or is it 14 inches? Now I'm being a bad Lucius person, but it's a long ways. He can get them out for only a 5. So I guess those would be my top 3.
So, obviously, I wholeheartedly agree with the Broodmother one. Also, 1.2 that you didn't mention that makes her also really good for this is that she can throw a Terror Tot 12 inches up the field, and now, for some reason, the Terror Tots have a 1-inch engagement, so you can hold down models with that. They kill your dogs. Other dogs, so you can summon them back. So just, you know, I think we definitely talked Broodmother to death. The only other one that you mentioned, or you didn't mention, is Dreamer. Either one, I'm partial to Dreamer 2, but Dreamer 1 with the ability to summon models right next to, or after they've failed a willpower duel to bring out models next to models, and then Dreamer 2 being so quick, and his crew is so quick. Now, they don't have a lot of some of the advantages of, like, you know, being able to interact, move, interact, but they are a quick crew, and a lot of their fast models are incorporeal, and so they're just really good for this one. So, yeah. And then other ones you touched on, Lucius. More, in my mind, Lucius 2, because I think you're just aching for pain if you want to play Lucius 1.
I think you nailed the 3. Lucius too, Lucius period, don't forget about the changelings, because while it's only a 12 inch now, that little hop up there, if you're playing in Neverborn, you can bring Wicked Dulls. Yeah, I think those three are the top ones I would see. Dreamer just has, you know, triple Insidious Madness and a bunch of the Daydreams to push all my models up the board before they even activate. I mean, why not have all your models on the half line except for four little Daydreams? You know,
sounds good to me. And then I don't play him, but Marcus, obviously, he has a lot of movement tricks, leap, stuff like that, that I think. But I just, it's not a master I play. So, but I think he could probably do this one well as well. So who are we on to? Arcanist?
Dirty Arcanist.
Well, we talked about Marcus, so, you know, we can switch over to the Arcanist. So, let's see here. So obviously we talked about Marcus, touched on a little bit there. I think Colette, again, with, you know, when we talked about it, when the GG4 came out, this is her GG4. And then Raspi, with her crew being able to interact with the strategy markers through ice pillars and stuff like that. So they don't even really have to get in too much danger. Same thing with Colette, with being able to interact with the doves and all their movement shenaniganry. And, you know, well, she can bring the Corphe Duet in keyword. So, and everyone loves the Corphe Duet because, you know, activation control. But yeah, I think those three are just really good. Raspi, Colette, and Marcus.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I would just swap out Marcus for Hoffman. But that's me, because I'm that Hoffman guy. It likes Hoffman 1 and Triple Watchers. That still has the threats of a Peacekeeper and Melissa Kor on the table and, like, a Hunter. There's a lot of utility to Triple Hunters. They're armored and move 7 and with a 2-inch push, so they don't have that technically that third AP, but usually they don't need it, and when they need it, they get it from Hoffman. So I still am much, still a great fan of the Hoff.
I had never noticed.
Yeah, Hoffman has a pretty insane utility. I don't think we need to beat it to death, but yeah, the 2-inch push is huge. The fast is huge. He's faster than you think.
Yeah, so. Well, and that 2-inch push is like, oh, that's cute. You think I'm engaged. Now I'm not. So that's yep. Pretty big.
Yep.
Their own little bit of, yep. Don't mind me.
Well, we can go over to Guild if Brian's been dabbling there more.
Well, I wouldn't call it dabbling so much as I've heard some people say that the stats are saying Guild aren't doing very well this GG, according to some stats, but I've been doing pretty well. For this one, though, I think you've already heard me say about Hoffman. I still think he's great. I'm a Hoff 1 fan. Dashiell, I've talked about a lot in this one with that new Nightcrawler network. There's still a model I want to see, but I will say Sonya. I like Sonya 2 a lot, with the pushing around of your own models, and those new Ashbringers seem pretty cool, and I like having a significant totem with incorporeal and a third AP to move off a bonus action. I have been running Tull a lot, but I also haven't been ringing the King's Wall or Watson. I've been doing very wide lists and to mixed effect. Sometimes very good, sometimes not. So I'm still playing around with that. But I would love to see more Lucius. I know we said Nelly was going to be great. Honestly, though, she doesn't work for me. I have tried and tried, but she's not quite my cup of tea. I think she still has play for anyone who likes her and can get her to work, but not for me. So my three would be like Lucius 2, Hoffman, and Dashiell.
And so, yeah. Okay, yeah. Go ahead, James.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Nelly is definitely has a lot of raw power, but a lot of weird interactions that you need a lot of practice with, and her models are still very flimsy, so that most of them will go down to almost anything. So I can definitely see that. My votes would probably still be Nelly and Lucius, just because they're the ones I've actually played before. I'd agree on Dashiell as well.
All right, so, yeah, for me, again, yeah, touch on Nelly again. Although I think, kind of like Brian, what you had said earlier, having threats to models, maybe you might have to bring, like, you know, like a rider or something like that to maybe beef her up with something if, you know, you're not already bringing a rider, because the Pale Rider is really good, especially when you slap a coat on him. So I think Nelly, I'll go with Tall as well. And then I'm going to go with a Dark Horse. And I have no reason to say this, but it just comes up in my mind that I think this would be good. And I'm probably wrong on it, but we're going to go with the man with the mustache, and that'd be Mr. Cornelius Bass, because a man with that glorious mustache, how wrong can you be with that? I mean, in previous GGs, or Bob talk about him, is that his ability to start outside of his deployment zone can be a bit of a trap, because then you're, you know, especially in those killy strategies like GG3 was, it can sometimes be more of a detriment than help. But I think in this GG, with it being a little bit more schemey, maybe Bass becomes that dark horse that no one expects. And then, well, and how cool is it to bring out the meme list and start 8 traps and keep your opponent locked in their deployment zone for 2 or 3 turns as they're trying to fight away all 3 traps, and your Pathfinder summoning more traps and stuff like that. Now, again, that would probably be more dependent upon deployment zones and stuff like that, but who doesn't love a good meme list?
I'm going to say this once, and probably the only time you'll hear it. I haven't seen it elsewhere, but for any of those Tull players, bring a Pathfinder. That 5 of tomes that you can just keep bringing back into your hand for that summoning of that trap can be really good. Just try it out.
Yeah, I can dig that.
And doesn't it, with the traps or something like that, doesn't it hand out staggered, and he works with stagger a little bit on some stuff?
Yep, that built-in staggered on their attack if they hit, and if you're playing Tull 1, that movement duel gets very, very difficult if you're staggered.
Yeah, I can see that.
All right.
Head over to Dirty Rezzers next.
Ugh.
Everyone's least favorite faction.
I just see a lot of Rezzers where I play locally.
I do too. Yeah, that's why I say it. I mean, I can throw out some wild speculation on this one. I would guess that Sheamus, probably both versions would be good. Sheamus 1 can get all over the map. Sheamus 2 can make certain parts of the map very, very sad to exist in. I think some of this you guys have already touched on, but Molly seems like she'd be good. The Kruelgans are the unfair version of Changeling, so obviously she's going to be strong in that. And just because I know the people that I play against favor him, I'd probably also say Von Stuck. He has a lot of nasty utility, and it's hard to take any of his stuff off the board, so that would be my 3 assertions.
Okay, so I didn't think too highly of him at the start of this GG4 in this one, but Castor, I think, if you want to play maybe the aggressive version of Castor Fervent, where he can get in and wreck some face. And I think this kind of goes away with what I said about having a high number of models. But But Castor Fervent, with his blast and being so quick, and that min 3 damage and stuff like that, he can really wreck some low-cost models at a very fast pace, especially with his totem bringing it along, and it might be able to get a kill in there as well. I think he would be good at this. I think, like you said, Molly would be very good at this. And Reva 2 specifically, I think, is kind of a dark horse. I know she's been making some noise in the Vassals world, but I haven't seen her mentioned a whole lot in anything else. She just has a lot of utility, being able to move your enemy models, moving her models. Her crew is much faster than you think. She has the ability to summon models. Now, granted, it's a little bit harder for her to do it than some of the other masters who can hire incidentally. But I think Reva 2 can really do some damage, like being able to make areas of the board just you don't want to go there, either because she's there or the pyre markers. So I've played a bit of her before the changing of the calendar year, and she is quite complicated. So you do have to put a little bit more work into her than learning, like, say, the basics of like a Sheamus. But I think she is really good at this one.
And Brian's just going to stay silent because he hates Rosas that much.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you've listened to Rage Quit Warrior lately, I know we have a few fans of Molly on our side of the thing, but Molly's up there. Sheamus, I've been bad touched by Sheamus recently. I'm just going to keep with Von Stuck. Just that whole interact and move that he can do, so he can place and then have them do actions, is extremely strong. Especially out of activation, and they still have access to Anna Lovelace. So, yeah. Von Stuck.
Makes sense. Reaching the end of our actual knowledge base here, but can get into the Ten Thunders a bit. Brian, you can definitely start this one off.
Well, Asami is a definitely go-to for this one and many things in this GG. Lin Lee has some amazing tech. I love throwing both versions into this one, one or two. Since these are impassable, I actually think McCabe is who I'd bring in for the last one. There's a lot of good contenders. I could play most. Actually, I could play most, except for Mei Fang, myself, I could play most of the Masters into this and do well, but I'd have to give McCabe probably the top notch. McCabe won, so your Hucksters now have the ability to Secret Passage on a 4 instead of a 6, and then being able to make them fast for that turn, so turn 2, they can get right out there and interact twice. Is great.
Yeah, I think that definitely makes sense. If I had to throw out a couple kind of random stabs, I would also say Asami and probably Lin Lee. Might throw out a Jacob Lynch, just because I know he was popular for a hot mint there. Don't know if that makes any sense, but I'm just going to say it.
Lynch is still good, but they're still at tennis. Tendency to be too far back to get to some of those far ones, or to dirtle too much around with things and not have enough of the AP up the board besides Huggy, because I mean Dual Masters is still great having Huggy and Lynch be 3 AP.
Yeah, so for me, I think McCabe being able to pass out the upgrades to make models fast, and he's got Hucksters and Desper. So mobility is definitely not an issue for him. I would have to say also Shenlong and Ling Lai. But yeah, the other ones, I think the only thing with Jacob Lynch is he's not totally bubbly, but he definitely prefers to stay close by. But then again, I think that might be one where you were talking about Obeys, where if he's wanting to stay close. Now, again, like he doesn't have to, especially with Hungering Darkness, because he's got the demise. But being able to obey the enemy models to do the voting for him, might be a really good master for that to do, where he can stay a little bit more in the middle and still get votes on the edges, even if there's enemy models over there. So yeah, I'd go with those ones.
Oh, last touch about McCabe. They previewed the Lane and the other model that I can't think of its name, but those two new models, I think one of the Lane was like a beater that can jump around, and then the other model had Dark Bargain, and I am really waiting for Ashes. I don't want to try to look it up on the weird news, but those ones seem like they're going to be great additions, and especially in this GG.
Nice.
And in this
stuff. And I just thought of it, but one of the shining examples of why I love this GG, I've played 3 games in a row against 10 Thunder opponents, and not one of them brought Fuhatsu. So that made me super excited.
I think Fuhatsu fans are still out
there. Oh, yeah.
But,
oh, yeah.
Not as
much. But it was kind of a refreshing change of pace to have 3 games in a row against 10 Thunders and not one Fuhatsu.
It was Host Ducat and the Alleyway Echo. Those are the models. I had to go back through and look up the weekly from Waldo's Weekly to find them. But not only do they look cool, but they look like they got some cool stats.
Yeah, very cool. Well, we talked a little bit about Explorers already. I can throw out some speculation. Maxine seems to be strong in most things. As far as interacting, though, I can't think of a ton. I think Anya, too, maybe, because she can kind of issue command, pseudo-issue command. Seems like it would be good there. Maybe throw out Teary. Well, you can still take Lucas McCabe, so I'll just say Lucas McCabe for a safe third.
There you go. I'd say Anya 2. English Ivan, his crew can be deceptively fast, I think, than when you at first glance they don't look it, but they can be. He also has the ability to summon models into base contact with you. From range, so that is, again, like we had talked about earlier, is super helpful. And then for my third one, Nexus, I mean, again, tons of AP, and now obviously can't obey the enemy models, but at the end of the game, or end of the turn, being able to do the obeys and get maybe some votes on there that your opponent wasn't expecting. So those would be my three.
Speaking of the Alloy Echo and Host Ducat, which are Wastrel Umbra models, you have both those keywords, Ivan and McCabe in Explorers. So both of them, and then I would have to go with Anya 2. I am a fan of Anya 1. I still love Anya 1, but I think Anya 2 edges her out.
I think it makes sense. All right. Now to the purely speculation faction.
Okay, before we start on this one, I throw a motion to Breach Burnt crew here that we no longer call this faction by its old name, but we need now refer to them as the Booze Bishops. And if you want to understand that joke, you have to listen to the last episode of Steam Powered Scoundrels Friday Night Foedown, and then you'll understand why I say they should be called the Booze Bishops.
Okay, well, I mean, just from my knowledge of the bio, I think the name makes sense, so I'm fine with it. For this one, I want to say the Clampets because they're my friends, but I think they probably have the AP efficiency issues on this one, so I'm going to throw out Wong, since fast is good for this. Probably some Ma, just because she's generally good at things. And how about Zip? Because he's annoying and also good at things. That'd be my guesses. Maybe Ulix, he has some extra kind of handing out AP here or there.
Yeah, I'd definitely go along with Ulix because, again, he can hand out extra AP. Plus, almost every one of his models can go fast. And then you're talking like those beater schemers. Other than piglets and like the squealers, so the wild boars and the war pigs or war rabbits, they all hit like, you know, freaking trucks. So they can go out there and kill something that's in the way, and then they can do their vote. So I definitely think Ulix is good. And then again, he can bring in piglets, which not only can they scheme, but when you kill them, they can drop a scheme marker. So even in death, they're scoring you points, or potentially if they're in the right spot, that is. I think Ma Tucket, just because Ma Tucket is fantabulous. So I think she's good in this. You know, the From the Shadows sniper gremlin-y guys. I can't remember their names now. You know, old man brain going on. Yes. Obviously, sometimes From the Shadows can be a trap, but you know, if you're doing it correctly, they can kind of be up there, maybe turn one, pick off a scheme marker, scheme runner, and then maybe do some voting later on. And then for my dark horse, I'm going to go Brewmaster 2. Now, granted, they don't get the extra moves until, was it the beginning of the next turn? But they can, that can kind of set them up to do some voting turn 2. So, and then being able to get those pass tokens from the Booze Spirit Shoujo, who doesn't like activation control? If they can go with like the last 3 or 4 activations of the turn, that's money. So I'm going to go Brewmaster 2 as my surprise there.
Well, I'm not going to go with any dark horse. Well, I guess it's kind of a dark horse, but still take Mama Z in Bayou. Because you still have the Gups and Silurids and things, which can be great. Then Captain Zip, which I have played against. Shout out to a scoundrel player that has touched me in wrong ways with Captain Zip in a number of indie tournaments. Then I guess, you know what, I will give one dark horse. And that's because someone I know is trying to make them work, and that is Somer. I see potential there. Lootmonger has a lot of things going for him in terms of if you can know how to play it, you get a lot of extra markers and schemes, and you can still grow some models. So you can start with those, and they can make skeeters be significant. So I think if you can figure out how he works, I think that's your dark horse.
So we got Outcast left.
Very cool. Oh yeah, I forget about them. Yeah. Outcast. I'll say Terra probably is pretty good. I might throw out the Vix, because the battle tempo seems pretty good for getting into position. Maybe, and Captain Zip also, I think, makes sense as far as AP efficiency.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, Terra. I mean, fast, summons, Mastery can activate twice. Although, I wouldn't sleep on Terra 2. I think it would take some work, especially when she got the Nerf Bat. But the ability to bring models, either your opponents or your models, to echo markers and stuff like that could be good. So I had, when we did the GG4 thing, I talked about the Vix, especially Vix 1, because now that Assassinate is gone, that's one scheme that a lot of Vix players didn't like taking them in. So that's gone. Again, 2-3 AP models. And and just everything that goes along there, a little bit faster than you think, so they can be whirling.
Well, Captain Zip is still in here, so I know that Zip is good. Don't want to jump on the bandwagon, but Terra is good. You got incorporeal, you got fast, you got a lot of things you can do. But I would say the one that I really want to see more of, I've seen it a little bit played, and I think it's got some things that are really hitting home, would probably be Hamlin 2, Hamlin the Piper. I know we talked a little bit about Obey Masters in this and being able to do things, and with just being able to gunk some stuff up with, like, body blocking with rats. I think Hamlin 2 might be the dark horse for my third person in here. But I don't get to see a lot of outcasts, so I wish I got to see more of them.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, we went just over an hour here, so any kind of final thoughts, guys? Yeah, I think that makes sense to me.
I mean, that sounds like a discussion for another whole podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I would also be looking forward to, hopefully we get this out, but this may or be before or right after the Ashes release. So let's... Yeah, that is true. I thought grasses. Is that what you said?
No, grass.
Oh, okay. But the third installment of Malifaux, in this book of the Burning Man. So,
I think everyone's very excited for that one.
That's it. This will be either right before or right after that. So, keep a listen.
Yeah, absolutely. My final plug is that I'm going to try and make Hinamatsu work the Forbidden Master. But Scott mentioning that the Assassinate is out of the pool makes me think Hinamatsu might be good again, so I'll be trying her out a bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. For sure. So yeah, thanks everyone for listening. We've covered all the GG4. I know personally I've been pretty busy lately, but I'm hoping to get a lot of more games. This is definitely getting me hungry for more, so hopefully we'll be on a more regular release schedule, and thanks for sticking with us. Catch you next time.